parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Here is your first question. My son, who is 3 since February, asked if I had a mummy and a daddy when I was small, and so I told him that I did, but they died, which is what happened. He had so many questions. I was very honest and direct with him. They died long before he was born. A few days later, he said, when you die, you are not gone until you go to a graveyard. So I brought him to their graves. The questions, oh so many questions, led me to speak about undertakers. This talk of people putting you underground, undertakers had the poor fella terrified. I do not want to dismiss his fear, but rather would like to explain it away. I know he keeps asking questions because he doesn't understand death properly. But how can I explain it to him? So far, or I've avoided saying things like passed away or they are sleeping, etc. I've showed him a dead crab on the beach, but I don't think he joined the dots as he hadn't seen the crab alive. I had him explain it to as a way to get clarity and draw pictures, but he still has more questions. I feel like I've brought a scary concept of undertakers or underneath takers, as he calls them, into his world. Can you give tips on how to explain this to him or books?
This is such a great question about how do I shut the door now the horse is well and truly bolted. No better than a 3-year-old go, but why?
But why?
Over and over and over. I mean, look, we've talked about death in small children before, and it is absolutely quite normal for children to be interested in death, even intrigued by it and fascinated by it. But this is a good example of a parent getting caught in a spiral of way too much detail, way too young. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, young children are definitely exposed to death as a concept, even via insects that they'll see on the path who've been stood on, or that pets that die, animals, plants, flowers. You know, you can kind of say, oh, that plant isn't alive anymore and now we get rid of it, or whatever you do, compost it, whatever way you do it. So the concept of things living and dying is not new to them, but that is actually still quite removed from them linking it to people.
Yeah.
So in lots of ways, look, as a parent, you were right to answer his questions, but at his age, he is far too young to grasp the permanence or eventual kind of inevitability of death, nor will he grasp, as you're seeing, that it really means the human body stops functioning, because actually it's far too abstract for a 3-year-old to get their little head around. So this is a bit of retrospective answering, really. You know, it's a bit late.
This is what you should have done.
generally, just try to keep answers short, simple and succinct, and be prepared to repeat them over and over again in the same way, using the same language. You were quite right to avoid that ambivalent language. Nothing like gone to sleep, passed away, we've lost them. Nothing like that, but using the words they died and they're not here anymore. We don't get to see them now. So yes, I had a mummy and daddy. They lived for a long time. We had lots of fun together, but now they're dead and we don't see them anymore. And then no matter how many times you explain it, they're still not going to grasp, you know, what causes death and what it actually means. He's not going to integrate this fully at 3 years old. He's just not.
Yeah.
So a quick answer followed by a quick redirection. Ooh, look at that. Let's do something else. And if the but whys are bringing you down this rabbit hole, that you can also go, these are really good questions. I don't know the answers to all of those. As parents, we're not supposed to have the answers to everything. It is okay to say, I don't know. What do you think?
Mm.
Why would you think that is? And see what weird, wacky, wonderful things that your child comes up with as well. Like, for example, if you're asked about what an undertaker is, given you've already introduced this word yourself of underneath taker, which made me laugh, simply say it's a job for helping people when someone dies.
Yeah.
That's it. Nothing about going into the ground or anything else. Just an undertaker is somebody who helps people when someone they care about dies. Because it's true, but you're not being over detailed.
Yeah.
And, you know, you keep talking about if that leads to, well, what is dead? You're talking about dead is when someone is no longer alive. We don't get to see them anymore, or whatever your belief system is. If you have
a
heaven.
That's a trickier one, really, because it's forever. And that's a hard concept to grasp for an adult to grasp.
If you have a heaven in your belief system, then it can be helpful with young children, because it gives you a place to locate people. They're now in heaven. We don't get to see them, but we can think about them. They live in our hearts. We can remember things about them. So I think if he's interested in if you had a mummy or daddy, it would be great to tell him stories about when they were here and things you like to do, show him photos and make it a narrative experience that way. Now, you're asking about, you know, is there books? There are books and some of them are lovely, but many of them are for children slightly older than three.
I was going to say, like, he's a bright little fella, isn't he? He is curious, and he must have great language too.
Absolutely. And I think that's to be encouraged. So I think I'm going to give you the name of a couple of books. Have a look through them because you might want to modify how and what you read from them for his age, but he might surprise you and be able for a little bit more than, because some of them say this is suitable for children over four, over five, but just use your discretion. There's The Invisible String by Patricia Karst. You know, that's a really nice way of talking about death and when people aren't there anymore. I Miss You by Pat Thomas is really nice as well. And Judith Kerr's Goodbye Mog, you know, the last book in the Mog series, Mog the Cat. I mean, is there like 14? I think Mog books, and in the end, to really draw an end to that book series, Judith drew an end to Mog. So, but it's actually really beautifully done, and it's a really nice way because it's a pet as well. So there's that degree of separation, but it can help children to understand it. So there are some good books to try. But honestly, I think it's about learning from this that. Be developmentally aware, be open and honest, but developmentally aware, which usually means sparse with your detail.
Yeah. Indeed. Someone suggests tell him to watch Coco, the Disney movie. It deals so well with death. Well, that's possibly true. I don't know if it might be. Then again, no, yeah. My 3-year old has watched Coco. Well, it's actually lovely, but it's kind of set mostly in Mexico. And there's lots of kind of music in it.
And the festival. And the festival of the dead.
And it's actually a very lyrical kind of movie, but it posits the idea that there is another place you can go to.
You see, and again, that's dependent on your belief system. Can you continue that story beyond the movie? Yeah.
Please ask how to get my 5-year-old to nap. She sleeps 11 hours at night. Wow. But will not nap during the day and is exhausted by 6. She will only nap if I walk her in the buggy, but wakes as soon as I stop. She gets hysterical if I put her into the cot for a nap. And I've tried leaving her for a few minutes, comforting her and trying again, but she becomes hysterical.
I mean, I
Do 5-year-olds nap?
5-month-old.
Oh, sorry. My mistake. 5-month-old.
No, because 5-year-olds definitely don't.
Yeah.
And do you know what? This is just highlighting a lot of 5-month-olds don't either. I suppose for me, I'm going to put out there, I'm not an expert in sleep. And, you know, this one isn't quite child behavioural because actually, unfortunately, children don't come with a power down button. I mean, I really wish they did.
You did, yeah.
I think every parent out there has that desire at times just to go, oh, just power them down now and so I can have a little bit of a rest. 5-6 months, it's not unusual for children, babies, to sleep regress a bit and to show a regression. What I'm not clear about in this letter is, has this baby ever napped during the day? Or because if they have, then this could be sleep regression, which is developmentally not great, not helpful, not pleasant, but not unusual. But if they've never napped, then honestly, my answer to this is babies can be fickle nappers. They just can be. And they tend to have their own sleep patterns, much as we want them to follow some kind of lovely sleep formula. They actually are all different. And in this case, it might be that your baby does most of her sleeping at night. I mean, yes, in an ideal world, and of course, developmentally and sleep consultants and everyone will tell you 1 to 2, 60 to 90 minute naps during the day. Be careful that they're tired enough, but not too tired. That they're not stimulated, but stimulated enough. That the room isn't light, but not too dark. You know, it's a balancing act. And so I'm not going to humour or patronise this parent by saying I've got some snippy little answer to this. I just don't, because babies do not come wired to sleep when we want them to. They just don't. And also, if you know that she will sleep when you push her in the buggy, you know, and you really want her to sleep or you feel she needs that nap, you may have to bite the bullet and just push the buggy.
Yeah, unfortunately.
You won't be the only parent power walking around outside.
No, indeed not.
You know, to get that sleep done. The other thing is, if she's exhausted by 6 p.m., she's probably going to bed soon enough around that time anyway.
Yeah.
To get her 11 hours. It's just that I do think that, you know, yes, it's better for babies at this age if they get a nap during the day. It's a long day to be awake, both for baby and parent otherwise. But there isn't a nice, neat answer. If it's something that you're really concerned about and you think it's affecting your baby, and if it was knocking on to disrupting this, because she is getting quite a nice long sleep at night, if it was affecting that, you could go down the road of a sleep consultant. But at the moment for me, she's getting a really good sleep during the night. At this age, our babies really want us to respond to their needs in terms of developing a secure base for a healthy attachment, in terms of really developing a secure sense of self. We know that they do better when we respond more to their needs, as you know, however needy they are. So that's why my, and I'd be really open to listeners who've been here, done that and have a solution. But for me, I would be saying, if your 5-month-old needs you to hold them, rock them or push them to sleep, do that.
Yeah. Now, no doubt people will have loads of different suggestions, and it seems to be kind of a trial and error type thing, because you don't
know. They're all different.
You didn't mention attachment issues. My son has always had a special bond with my sister, his aunt. My sister left for Japan when he was just 18 months and came back this March for the first time since the move. I've been over to her but never brought my son. He has just loved her since day one, and he actually remembered her when she got back. He is usually incredibly shy in front of people. He doesn't know, but he just took to her immediately. I already know he's going to be very upset when she leaves this weekend. How can I prepare him for her departure and make it a little less traumatic for him?
Aww. I think, yeah, that's lovely. And it's lovely for children to have these really special relationships with their aunts, uncles, grandparents. I think it's really important. I think as well, just be aware of how you might be feeling about your sister going back. You know, she, you know, this is her first time back in, you know, what is it, 3.5 years. And so you might be a little upset about her going, and that's okay too. And being aware that when we feel upset about something, our children are so attuned to our emotional states and they still co-regulate with us, that he'll take his cue from you. But it is okay to be upset. That's a normal, healthy human emotion. So I would be saying empathically to him, if he is upset, if you are upset, let him say, yeah, it's sad when we have to say goodbye to somebody we care and they live far away. That is a sad thing. So we can be sad together. And then talk to him a bit about what I'd call parts language. You know, this is your sad part that's coming out, and you have a happy part and a scary part and an excited part and a whatever part you need. And what could we do to help find your happy part and bring that out? I think as well, though, even in anticipation of her going, you could get a book with pictures of Japan, you know, mark Japan and Ireland on a map or a globe, so that he has a visual as to where is she. He can locate her somewhere, even in his mind, go, oh, that's where she is when we're not together. I think that would be really nice. And you could help him make a collage of pictures, words, language, understand a bit more about Japan, so that he can imagine her when they're not together. She could also maybe start now posting him regular postcards from Japan and maintaining the relationship.
Yeah, there's Skype as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so much easier now to do that. He's also 4 years old now. 18 months was different. You know, when she was going, his grasp of people permanence was much more fragile. Yeah. His concept of, you know, she's gone and will she be back is different. Now he has much more awareness, but also he's at an age where you really can reason and explain a lot better. So I think it's okay that he'll feel sad. Give him space to feel sad and help him understand and locate her somewhere. I think that would be really nice. And then find ways proactively to keep the relationship alive.
Yeah. The poor little fella. I feel sorry for him in advance now. Really.
It is. It's really hard. But how lovely that he has this relationship for his aunt as much as him. You know, she must have felt very special that he remembered her and was so excited to see her.
Going back to the 5-month-old who won't take a nap but does sleep 11 hours at night. I will never forget when my then 1.5-year-old, now 3-year-old, stopped napping. There was no waning off. There was no warning. It just stopped. It was a sad day. Nap time for her meant coffee and laundry time for me. Now all I have is piles of laundry and I'm tired all the time. And that's true. That's so important, especially at the weekends, if you can get them down for an hour or two.
I think the nap is so important for parents. We miss it way more than they do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Someone else says, I would take a full night of sleep over a nap. My daughter is nearly 2. We still have issues with full night sleep. Indeed, and a fair amount of people are saying that. Why in the name of God would you disrupt an 8 hours? No, she's not saying that. She's saying she wants the 5-month-old to take the 11 hours of sleep, but also have
and
a nap during the day.
Yeah.
She's just being greedy. on the subject of death, somebody else did also email into us about. One texter says, 10 years ago when my mother passed away, my then 7-year-old nephew asked, was the Undertaker the actual one from the World Wrestling Federation? And Joe says, my mum took my daughter when she was four out to the graveyard to visit my grandparents' graves, as it was one of their anniversaries, to plant some flowers. Lily, our wonderful daughter, now thinks that graveyards are where we plant dead people and they help the flowers grow on the graves. That's a lovely idea.
Well, you know, at least she has a narrative about it, so she's making some semblance of sense.
Yeah,
it's such an abstract notion.
Yeah. Speaking of narrative, somebody's texting to say, Mog dies? Well, now I'm a bit teary at my desk. Right, we have more questions for Joanna after this.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie. Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
Five 3106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna is still with us. I recently had to have an operation on my appendix, a relatively minor surgery with no issues. I have a small scar, but told that will fade. My 6-year-old, though, was very worried about the operation, which we were honest about and talked her through. She even visited me, and I made sure I was happy and jolly in the hospital bed when she came in. Now that I'm home, she's saying I'm never allowed to go to hospital ever again. She said it was scary, she didn't like the smells, and the doctors are mean because they hurt me. I've repeatedly assured her that I was fine and not in danger and that the doctors are great and do so much good work. She seemed unsettled by the whole thing, and now I wonder, should I have said nothing at all? No reassurance seems to make a difference. Is she too young to understand how it works?
No, she's not too young, but hospitals do have a particular look, feel and smell. And
they do.
Doctors walking around in white coats, and it is all a little bit scary. So there is context for how she's feeling here. I would be saying, look, if you don't have one of those little child medical play kits, get one. They're not expensive, or they don't have to be expensive. You can get options and start using some role play. She's at an age where she's in that stage 3 developmental play, where children deepen their understanding about experiences that they and the people in their lives have through dramatic exploration and play. So this is where they insert themselves into the role, you know, where they play at being moms and dads, at being doctors and patients, at being teachers and students, where they're in the role and they're really testing the boundaries of understanding here about, if I was the doctor, how nice could I be? Or how big and bad would I be? How much can I get away with? They're really trying to explore. So I would meet her at that developmental level she's at, using her language, which is play. Mm. And I would do some role play with the child's medical play kit, have the teddies or the you know, the dollies. You can get a doctor one or a vet one. Either would actually suffice for this. And just let her play out the experience, and you can play as well. But I think you could also empathise with her that, yeah, you know, I hear you. It was really hard for you when I was away from you and in hospital. Now I'm home. We get to be together again. Yeah, I had a pain in my tummy and the doctor actually made it feel better. And now I feel really good. You know, so you're not dismissing and saying, oh, no, it was fine.
Yeah.
But you're saying, that was really hard, but now it's okay.
Mm.
And keeping it on track. But I still think, give her that dramatic play exploration piece, and I think it'll really help.
Yeah, because especially if she finds herself in a situation where she has to go to hospital.
Oh, don't do
doctor.
Anything like promise that nobody's going to hospital again. Never do that. Yeah.
My 4-year-old tells the teacher everything. I mean everything. She's very nice and doesn't seem to mind, but it's getting embarrassing that she knows about every row, illness and conversation we have. How can I get him to be more private?
this is the age our children are just soaking up everything and repeating it. And the reason they do that is not because they wish to embarrass or humiliate us, but how they understand things is through projection and repetition. So just as that 6-year-old is in that role play stage of development, your 4-year-old is in stage 2, which is what we would call projective narrative play, but simply put is where they have, you know, the two little characters talk to each other, the two little toys interact and talk. And what they're doing there is they take situations that they're exposed to through us in life, they locate it onto the toys and they try to work out solutions and play it out to understand it. So clearly your 4-year-old has a good relationship, feels close to, you know, his teacher, wants to involve the teacher in stories from home and sort of doesn't have yet that filter, of course, mm-hmm. because they're four.
Yeah.
So I think, look, it's rather than teaching your four-year-old not to be betraying family secrets, it's more incumbent on us as parents to be super aware of what little ears are picking up on as best we can. And if need be, now at four, you will have some... You will have a degree of success with this, but you're going to have to be very clear and repeat it over and over that there are some stories that are home stories and some stories that are outside stories. And mum and dad having a disagreement, that's a home story. So that story stays in home.
Yeah.
And it's just you want to be really clear about what is something we talk about at home and what is something we talk about outside. And the other thing is you might want to enlist the teacher to help and put a little boundary going, oh, I'm going to pause you here. And is this a story that should stay at home or a story that should come into school? Because in the moment, he's just wanting to connect with the teacher. And a way of doing that is to wait till I tell you something and to give you this story. So if he's getting a positive, receptive audience, he's going to keep coming up with stuff to tell the teacher.
Well, if you're the teacher, I can imagine the teacher going, oh, wow, this is good.
There's a bit of it just being kind of funny. But so I would say, and also while it might feel embarrassing, this is something that all children do. All parents have been, you know, put on the spot and, you know, mortified by their children sharing something that you may not even have been aware they picked up on.
Sinead Ryan, who works here in Newstalk, on Twitter says, my 8-year-old once announced to the class that he had gone to Edinburgh for the weekend and we had to stay in a travelodge to save money. Travelodges are perfectly respectable, nothing wrong with that at all. Also as well, for the 5-month-old who won't nap, for the caller with the 5-month-old baby not napping, she could try wearing her in a sling and going for a walk. That's the only way my little girl used to sleep for naps when she was that age. It was lovely for me too to have a bit of exercise and breathing space during the day. The fresh air really helped. Good luck. I hear the desperation and the exhaustion.
Yeah.
It's hard, but it passes. I don't know about that, but until they start having opinions. But I suppose it's worth a go, depending on the size of the child, of course.
If at 5 months you can carry them, because it depends on the size of them. Also, the slings can be helpful because as a parent, you've still got your hands free then if you want to move around and do things. Yeah.
I feel that poor mother's pain of the 4-year-old telling the teacher everything. At a parent-teacher meeting, my 6-year-old's teacher showed me a lovely picture he drew of me drinking wine. I was morto. All the other parents would walk past it. But I'd say there was probably 20 other pictures of other parents doing exactly the same thing. I separated from my husband almost 2 years ago, and both myself and my husband have both met new partners. But my 8-year-old son is very upset, as he thinks it was his fault. What's the best way to reassure him that everything is okay and that mum and dad will always be mum and dad? I have told him our new partners are more people in his life that love him, and it's a good thing. How can I make him see that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't make him see that.
Yeah.
You know, that just to kind of take yourself off the hook here, but just keep repeating it as that is the line. This is what it is, and you keep going over. At the point of your separation, and even now, really, for lots of children, they're still developmentally in that stage of magical, omnipotent, wish fulfillment type of belief system where if I will it, it can be. If I wish it, I could affect that outcome. It's often where children who get very cross and say, I wish you weren't my mummy or daddy anymore. I wish this. And then if something happens or you get hurt, they think they did it. They really do. And I think something like a parental separation is really complex. It's a complex adult experience, let's be honest. But it's really complex for little children to understand. But why? Why aren't you together anymore? And maybe if I was really good, and maybe if I didn't misbehave that day, and maybe if and it's just because they're trying to hold on to some degree of control that if I was different, then this would be different, because then I can make it different. Yeah. But then when you tell me you've both got new partners, I've lost that hope.
Yeah.
Now I don't have that wish even anymore, because you're telling me there's other people. So at 8 years old, your child is just in a place where I just wish mum and dad were together, and now you're telling me that's not so, so I'm disappointed, and this is how I'm expressing it. So I think that it's really important, first of all, that mum and dad are on the same page with how they talk about this. But I do think that keep repeating that the reason you split up was that you decided how you feel about each other changed, and you decided you would be better as parents if you were just friends instead of living together. And that's the decision you made. And you keep repeating that. And that you're absolutely right saying that the new people in your life are more people that love him. I think as well that I think that the Usborne have a book called All About Families. It's not new. It's around a long time, I think, now. But it's actually a really nice one. It shows all kinds of families, like every kind of family structure you could imagine, blended families, parents who divorce, remarry, get new partners. It's all in there. And I think that something like that at his age could be a really helpful way to reinforce the narrative that you're telling him.
Yeah. And would it be helpful, if it's possible, if relations between his parents are reasonably good, that they can together reinforce
that? Oh, that would be ideal.
That
would be absolutely ideal, that you sit down together and deliver that message that how we feel about each other change, but how we feel about you will never change. We'll always be your mum and dad and love you in the way that we always have. And you still have both of us, and now you have even more people that love you. Our family is getting bigger. So that you're reframing it as a positive thing,
yeah.
But also to allow him to be disappointed, allow him to be, well, that's great, guys, but I really wish it was different.
Yeah. Going back to that very honest four-year-old, Martin says, I'm a primary school teacher, and the story of the four-year-old telling their teacher everything reminds me of advice I received in college. For parents who come to you about all the things their child has said happened in school, remind them that if they only believe half the things they hear about us, we'll only believe half what we hear about them. And somebody on Twitter says, my then four-year-old once told someone who called at the door, my dad can't come down because he's doing his poos. So maybe oversharing with the children there is another way to go. Joanna,
thanks so much
for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. A History of Angels.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. Five Rivers Fostering.ie.